Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today we're getting into a really foundational legal case, Irving Trust Company v. Deutsch from 1934. It's, you know, a landmark decision when we're talking about what's expected of corporate directors.
That's right. This case gets right to the heart of a critical question for anyone involved in corporate law.
Mm-hmm.
When does a director's own financial interests run up against their responsibility to the company they're leading?
Exactly. And for you listening, whether you're maybe a future lawyer or just someone keen to understand how businesses are supposed to be run, this case established some non-negotiable principles about conflicts of interest, especially when a company hits a rough patch financially. Have you ever thought about whether a company's money troubles might give its leaders a bit more leeway to pursue their own opportunities? Well, Irving Trust v. Deutsch offers a pretty clear answer.
Precisely. Let's look at the backdrop. This case was heard in the Second Circuit in 1934. As we've mentioned, the central issue is the tension between a corporate director's duty to the company, their fiduciary duty, and, well, the temptation of personal profit.
Right.
And the core takeaway, something to really keep in mind as we go through this, is the very strict rule against directors taking what's considered a corporate opportunity, even if the company at that moment appears unable to act on it.
Okay, so how did this all play out? What were the facts?
Well, there was a company called Acoustic Products in the radio business, and they really needed some key patents held by another company, DeForest Radio.
Okay.
Acoustic's agent, a guy named Bell, worked out a deal to buy a significant chunk of DeForest stock, about a third of it, actually for $100,000. The idea was that owning this stock would give Acoustic access to those crucial patent rights.
So it was a strategic move.
Absolutely. And what's fascinating here is the sequence of events. Acoustic's board of directors, which included Deutsch, the company president, actually gave the green light. They approved this stock purchase.
Okay, so the board was on board initially.
Yes, but then Deutsch reported back that unfortunately the company simply didn't have the immediate funds, the cash on hand, to make the acquisition happen.
Right, so the company couldn't immediately finance this really important deal. Here's where things get really interesting for, you know, anyone thinking about the responsibilities involved here.
Exactly.
Instead of just letting this opportunity pass, Deutsch, along with other directors like Biddle and Hammond, decided to form their own investment group, a syndicate, and they went ahead and bought the DeForest stock themselves using their own money.
Mm. And, you know, if we connect this to the bigger picture, they would later argue that their intention was still to benefit Acoustic by ensuring access to those patents. But the crucial point for us to understand is that they made this purchase in their personal capacity, not on behalf of the company.
And the story continues, right? What happened with that stock?
Well, this syndicate then sold those DeForest shares, and they made a significant profit, a profit that went straight into their own pockets, not to Acoustic Products.
And what happened to Acoustic Products?
Sadly, down the line, Acoustic Products ended up in bankruptcy.
Oh, wow.
And that's where our plaintiff comes into the picture. Irving Trust Company, acting as the trustee in the bankruptcy proceedings, they then filed a lawsuit against these directors, arguing that they had fundamentally failed in their fiduciary duty to the company.
So the core question that the court had to grapple with, and that's really important for you to consider, is this. Can directors who are obligated to act in the best interests of their company personally profit from an opportunity that the company couldn't immediately seize due to a lack of funds? It feels like a complex situation with a lot of shades of gray, doesn't it?
It does seem that way initially, and that's where the legal arguments really come into play. The first key issue was whether these directors actually violated their duty of their fiduciary duty by essentally taking an opportunity that belonged to the corporation for their own personal enrichment.
The plaintiff's argument was pretty direct, wasn't it?
Yeah.
They essentially said that directors have an unwavering responsibility to always put the corporation's interests first. Full stop.
Right.
They can't use their influential positions to grab opportunities for themselves, regardless of the company's current financial situation. The chance to acquire that controlling stake in DeForest stock was clearly something Acoustic needed.
And the directors on the other side tried to make the case that they were acting in good faith. Their argument was that they stepped in to ensure Acoustic could still get those critical DeForest patents.
Okay.
They claimed that if they hadn't personally intervened and bought the stock, the entire deal would have collapsed and Acoustic would have been in an even worse position.
That sounds somewhat plausible on the surface, like they were maybe trying to do something beneficial in a difficult situation. But the second really important legal question the court had to address was, whether a corporation's temporary financial inability could actually excuse what looked like a clear conflict of interest.
And this is where the court showed, well, a significant degree of skepticism. What's fascinating here, and a crucial point for you to understand, is the underlying principle. If you allow a director to argue, well, the company couldn't afford it right now, so it's okay for me to take it for myself, it creates a really problematic incentive.
Yeah, I can see that.
There's a legitimate concern that directors might not work as diligently as they could to secure funding for the company if they knew a potential personal profit opportunity was waiting for them if the company failed to act quickly.
Exactly. It opens the door to potential self-dealing and a situation where the director's personal financial interests could easily, you know, take precedence over their obligations to the corporation and its shareholders.
Yeah.
So ultimately, what did the court decide? How did they rule?
Well, the Second Circuit was quite clear in its judgment. They actually reversed the lower court's decision. They established a firm rule. Directors are strictly prohibited from taking corporate opportunities for their own personal gain.
Wow.
And critically, they stated that a company's financial difficulties do not create an exception to this fundamental rule.
That's a pretty strong stance then. It sounds like they weren't really buying the good intentions defense at all.
Not at all. Judge Swan, who wrote the majority opinion, was quite emphatic on this point. He stressed that allowing the director's justification would inevitably lead to a temptation to refrain from exerting their strongest efforts on behalf of the corporation. The core idea here is preventing a situation where a director's personal gain could be at odds with their duty to the company.
And there was a really powerful quote from Judge Swan that I think really captures the essence of this strict ruling. Something about not undermining the principle of undivided loyalty.
Absolutely. He wrote, and this is key, if directors are permitted to justify their conduct on such a theory, there will be a temptation to refrain from exerting their strongest efforts on behalf of the corporation since, if it does not meet the obligations, an opportunity of profit will be open to them personally. That really gets to the heart of the matter. It's about safeguarding that fundamental duty of loyalty.
That's incredibly clear. And it wasn't just the initial ruling, was it? I recall something about a denial of a rehearing. What's the significance of that for us to understand?
Right. The fact that the court denied the petition for rehearing and did so per curiam, meaning by the court, without an attributed judge, really underscores the strength and unanimity of their decision.
Oh, okay.
Even when the directors sought, you know, another bite at the apple, another opportunity to argue their case, the court stood firm on its original ruling, reinforcing the fundamental principle at stake.
Okay, so this case really solidifies some crucial legal principles for anyone looking at corporate law. It's not necessarily inventing entirely new legal tests, is it? But it's really emphasizing and reinforcing some existing fundamental ones, right?
Precisely. It really reinforces the core fiduciary duty of loyalty that directors owe to the corporation. They must avoid any situation where their personal interests could even potentially conflict with the corporation's interests.
And it really highlights the broad scope of what's known as the corporate opportunity doctrine. It's not just about opportunities that the corporation is actively pursuing. It extends even to situations where the corporation might currently be unable to act due to, say, financial limitations.
Exactly. And it's important to remember that it's not just the directors themselves who can be held responsible in these situations. What about Bell, the agent who initially negotiated the deal for Acoustic? Was he off the hook?
That's a crucial point. No, the court also determined that Bell, as Acoustic's agent, was likewise prohibited from profiting personally from the deal he was negotiating on behalf of the company. His duty was to act in Acoustic's best interest, and joining the syndicate to personally benefit was a clear violation of that duty.
And we shouldn't forget the other members of the syndicate, those who weren't necessarily directors or agents of Acoustic. What about them?
The court held them jointly liable for the profits as well.
Why was that?
Right, because they knowingly participated in a transaction where they understood, or should have understood, that the directors, the fiduciaries, had a clear conflict of interest. By willingly participating in that, they basically became equally responsible for the resulting profits. They couldn't just turn a blind eye.
Got it. So for anyone listening who is interested in corporate law, maybe heading into practice soon, what are the key lessons, the main takeaways from Irving Trust v. Deutsch?
Well, the first really clear takeaway is that fiduciary duties in corporate law are not to be taken lightly. They are fundamental and not easily excused, even when a company is facing financial difficulties. You can't just say, oops, company's broke, guess I'll take this.
Absolutely. And that good faith argument that the directors tried to use. This case demonstrates pretty clearly that it's not a valid justification when your personal profit directly clashes with your duty to the company, particularly in situations involving financial challenges. The court looks past that.
And the courts are going to be paying close attention, right? If directors engage in what appears to be self-dealing, they should anticipate rigorous scrutiny and a strong likelihood of being ordered to return any profits they've made. Disgorgement, as they call it.
Exactly, disgorgement. The strictness of this rule is really designed to prevent directors from even being tempted to prioritize their own financial gains over the well-being of the company and its shareholders. It's prophylactic.
And at its heart, this case really underscores the foundational principles of corporate governance. The idea that those in positions of leadership within a company have a primary responsibility to act in its best interests without any conflicting personal agendas influencing their decisions. It's about trust.
Precisely. Irving Trust v. Deutsch stands as a powerful and, frankly, enduring reminder of the unwavering nature of a director's fiduciary duty of loyalty. Financial difficulties do not provide a loophole, do not grant a license for directors to seize corporate opportunities for their own personal enrichment.
So as we wrap up this deep dive into Irving Trust v. Deutsch, it really prompts you to think, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
In today's, you know, intricate and rapidly evolving business world where financial landscapes can change so quickly, how do these long-established principles of fiduciary duty continue to shape the responsibilities of corporate leaders when they face challenging economic times?
Mm-hmm.
This case, even though it's from almost a century ago, provides a really crucial framework, a lens for understanding and analyzing those modern-day situations and appreciating the lasting importance of loyalty in corporate governance. It's still incredibly relevant.